But I think why Sprung is really tragic is that, like, I think in a different era, this could have been a show that was on and been on and had multiple seasons and kind of thrived on, like, a sort of classic ABC, you know, Tuesday night, Wednesday night comedy, and had, like, a good maybe 4 to 5 year run. Hello, everyone. This is Alex.
And this is M.
Welcome to the latest episode of The Good, The Bad, The Basic.
This is the podcast for anyone who enjoys binging new TV series and revisiting old favorites. On this podcast, we'll be discussing what we love, what we hate, and what's just a bit problematic about the TV and movies that we're addicted to, though not necessarily in that order. This week, we continue with our limited edition season and discuss the Freevee original crime comedy, Sprung.
Because of overcrowding and COVID-19, several nonviolent offenders are granted early release from prison. But for three of them, the excitement of unexpected freedom is soon eclipsed by a desperation to make money. They soon find themselves tempted back to a life of crime in order to finance the straight and narrow. So is Sprung worth watching? Stay tuned.
All right, here are some details about Sprung. The series is classified as a crime comedy. It's on the Freevee network, which is a free subsidiary streaming service of Amazon Prime. It was released on August 19th of 2022, and it was created by Greg Garcia. The series stars Garrett Dillahunt as Jack, Shakira Barrera as Gloria, Philip Garcia as Rooster, Martha Plimpton as Barb, Claire Gillies as Wiggles, James Earl as Melvin, Kate Walsh as Congressman Paula Tackleberry. So Jack and Rooster were cellmates in prison. Gloria was in the same prison on the woman's side, and she was Jack's girlfriend, whom he spoke to through the prison toilets. Barb is Rooster's mom. Wiggles is Rooster's ex-girlfriend. And Melvin is Wiggles' current boyfriend. The congresswoman is the woman who they plan on stealing from. So now you're in the know.
Yeah. So this is pretty cool. So the streamers obviously, like, are changing, and so HBO Max, Amazon, and Netflix as well now have all sort of been, like, flirting with and launching these sort of advertising, like, free tiers that are essentially, like, advertising based. Basically,
right. It's like having TV again.
Yeah, it's basically cable again. So Freevee was Amazon's, like, sort of new, like, launch into that space. And they launched it, I think, with intent for it to do well. So there was, like, a couple of things that ended up on the Freevee show that I think Amazon really put, we're going to do something good behind this. And Sprung essentially is one of them. So you have this sort of Tegan and Sarah show that I personally did not watch, but heard good things.
I watched it. High school, it's good, but it's a little bit slow, and even as much as I liked it, I don't think it's going to get renewed.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I watched the pilot. I thought it was slow, and I just didn't, it wasn't my bag. It was slow. So, like, there's that. And then there was, Sprung, which we're going to talk about now. And then there is Freevee's runaway hit, which I'm sure if you like this podcast and you're interested in television and just interested in media in general, you've heard about, which is Jury Duty. Jury Duty was a huge, like, kind of big hit of the Amazon Freevee tier. But we're not talking about Jury Duty. We're talking about Sprung. So This is interesting. This is an interesting little show. I think it's hard. While I don't say like, I enjoyed it for the most part. It was nice to see some, like, I think really familiar actors on it. There's a lot of sort of like TV veterans on this show. That was really nice to see them. And I think it's for the most part solidly written. And I think it's kind of a shame that it ended up on the sort of Amazon freebie tier. And like Amazon is a tech company, so it's sort of notorious. The tech companies, streamers are really notorious for like not promoting their shows at all. But I think but I think why Sprung is really tragic is that like I think in a different era this could have been a show that was on and been on and had multiple seasons and kind of thrived on like a sort of classic ABC, you know, Tuesday night, Wednesday night comedy, and had like a good maybe 4 to 5 year run.
It's definitely, you know what, you bring up such a great point, because this is absolutely the sort of show that I would have watched when I was like somewhere between 10 and like my early teens on like an ABC or a Fox on prime time on like a Tuesday or Wednesday night.
Absolutely. Like it has that quality to it. Like it's not the thing that like is really like my taste or that I like am gonna see it in every night, but it is a something that is like, it's funny, it's very solidly written, it's like a solid sitcom, and it is something that like I could see like being successful. It's something that if I were an exec, I would have ordered this pilot too. Like I would have put this on air.
Right. So let's get into the show itself. As we said, these three people, Rooster, Gloria, and Jack, get out of prison early release because of COVID-19. They were all in there for nonviolent offenses. Rooster had stolen an ice cream truck. Gloria was in there for credit card cloning and, you know, conspiracy and other things like that and fraud. And Jack was actually in there. Some judge made an example of him back in the 90s and gave him a 30-year sentence for selling weed.
Oh, Jack was on, I think he was like, Jack is like, it's a mandatory minimum. That's what specifically.
Yeah, a mandatory minimum of 30 years. So he only got out after 26 years because of the COVID-19 overcrowding. Like, they're like, you got to let some of these people out so that we can flatten the curve, quote unquote. And he got picked and he got released. And that's the only reason why he was out. But he got locked up when he was like 18 or 19. And he comes out, he's like 44, 45 years old. Can you imagine?
Right. And with
over
that,
some pot.
Yeah, and like with that, the show is definitely trying to say something important, or it's trying to highlight something that like is a real problem, because this is like the mandatory minimums and like the three strikes rules like are a problem, and they were like a huge problem like in the 90s, because like, and this is something that if you're like up on like sort of criminal justice advocacy at all, like people like talk about, the people who are like are dedicated to that work talk about, like this is a real thing that happened to a lot of people in terms of like you'll be 19, 20, 16 or whatever, and you have a three strike and like the three strike rule, or you have these mandatory minimums for like drug charges, which include weed, and you either possession or selling or intent to distribute, and you suddenly have 40, like 30 years of your life taken away, and it's for non-violent offense like this.
Right. And I mean, even more than being a non-violent offense, this particular charge for the particular drug that he was selling, like you didn't rob anyone, you didn't steal from anyone, and I don't care what they taught you in like the war on drug seminars, marijuana is not a gateway drug, and it's incredibly difficult. You actually have to try to die from ingesting marijuana. So that in particular was also wild to me, because by the time Jack is released, right, which is in 2020 when all these criminals are released, marijuana is legalized in many states, which Rooster's mom brings up. And there's even like cooking shows on Netflix, like of like people, chefs cooking with cannabis on like Netflix and the Food Network. People get medical marijuana cards and they get like medical marijuana lollipops and foods and edibles and things like that. And can you imagine people just like making their career with the very thing that like destroyed your life? Because you were in the wrong place at the wrong time in front of the wrong judge who wanted to make an example of you.
Yeah, that sucks. But like one thing about, I will say about the mandatory minimums is like why they particularly suck. It's like, it's not even in a judge's control to reduce your sentence. Like it is like law. Like they have to assign those like 26 years. And that's like why.
Yeah. The 30 years. No, you're right. You're right. It was a mandatory minimum. So minimum it was like sentence. Mandatory 15 years because he was selling pot. And then mandatory that he double it because Jack was selling pot near a school district, like within a school district, like a school zone.
Right.
So mandatory 30 years. And there was nothing he could, that would have been able to be done about it.
And that's why that was kind of suck.
Yeah. And I mean, I live in Florida where there's like, we have three strikes rules here. We also have 10-20 life for non-Floridians. This basically means that if you bring your gun to a crime, even if you don't pull out your gun, that's an automatic 10 years. If you pull out your gun and you hold it against anyone, that is an automatic 20 years. And if you fire your gun, even if no one is harmed, that's life.
Yeah.
So that's the, and Marissa Alexander, who was a woman in a domestic violence situation, pulled out her gun and fired a warning shot into the air and was arrested, even though the husband who she fired the warning shot because of admitted that he had instigated the altercation. So these laws have very far-reaching ramifications because they don't look at nuance. They're not case by case. They're very cut and dry, black and white. And you have innocent people who get taken to jail, or in the case of this character, Jack, a very young person who lost a great deal of his life, like his true formative years, all of his adulthood, basically, until he got out of prison.
Right. And that's where we find him when we sort of start this story. It's really, it's obviously on this super tragic note. And so we're here. We meet Jack. We meet Rooster. We initially meet Jack and Rooster. And then Rooster's mom. And so then Jack sort of not having anywhere to go or anything to do, like Rooster and his mother are kind enough essentially to give him a ride. Not just give him a ride, but like he stay with them at their house. And
for a steal too, like only $40.
$40. Yeah. And as along with their friend and Jack's girlfriend, Gloria.
Right. So they don't have anywhere to go because Jack's parents are elderly. You know, he has no way. He hasn't seen them in several years because they're too old to visit the prison. He doesn't remember his home phone number. There's a lot going on. And Gloria doesn't want to go to her family because she has a tense relationship with her sister. And so they all chill at Gloria's spot. But Gloria, not Gloria, Barb, Rooster's mother's house. But she makes it very clear that, like, you all went to prison for different things. Like, y'all already got records. I'm trying to pull a job. And we learn very quickly that Rooster got his criminal streak from her. She's trying to pull a job. They want to initially blackmail the congresswoman. And then once they learn that she's actually making money off of the pandemic, they decide to rob her for everything that she has. Of course, first they pull like a smaller job, which is like robbing Melvin because he had essentially bought up all the toilet paper during the initial shelter in place order. And now he's like racketeering with toilet paper and selling it at exorbitant prices to people.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Melvin. And so the show is definitely taking an edge and like a knife to sort of, I think, the selfishness that the pandemic engendered in a lot of people. Kate Walsh playing the congressman doing sort of like a, yeah, playing the congressman, Kate Walsh of like Grey's Anatomy, Addison Montgomery fame, which
it was. Oh, that's where I knew her from. I didn't recognize her with blonde hair.
Yeah, I was about to say, like, the blonde did throw me off for a bit. And then I was like, oh, no, that's my favorite. Because I actually really do love Kate Walsh. And I love when she shows up in different things, because I think she's always really competent and fun and a good time. Is Paula. And then, yeah, so we find out. So they find out Melvin, and then they find out Paula is benefiting from essentially insider trading, and also essentially, and then she's laundering her insider trading money from by like she's laundering her money through the artwork in her house. So like she has like started this thing of like replacing the real artwork that's super valuable in her house with like fakes, so that they can essentially take that money elsewhere and like shelter it. And once the group, our sort of ragtag group, find that out, they make a plan. They make a big plan. And that's the plan that we follow throughout the course of the series to rob the congresswoman. So that's what we do. That's what we watch for this series. And it's fun. It's executed super fun. And in through the course of the series, we're mainly focused on this heist that's playing out, but we're also focused on sort of the side relationships with, we're focused on a lot of side relationships with the different characters. I think it's interesting. I think the show is interesting and the character arcs are interesting. I think the show has a lot of interesting things to say about the criminal justice system and growing up and taking responsibility for your choices. I thought it was, there's like a section towards the end where Jack makes this monologue where he talks about how it really is his fault, which I don't think I vibed with personally. I don't think I liked that, and that the show sort of took that position. Like, Jack is lamenting that, like, it is his, like, he was ultimately responsible for, like, his, like, 30-year sentence, because all he wanted to do was, like, at 19 was ride around on his skateboard and smoke weed. I'm like, yeah, that's the ambition of a lot of 19-year-olds. Like, that doesn't mean you deserved it. Like, and which then Gloria, like, says that to him, and he's like, no, I did. And the show sort of ends up taking this position of, like, personal responsibility, kids. And it's like, I don't know that I was into that messaging, because I thought it was dumb. I think
I agree with that. Because I think two things can be true. Personal responsibility is important. And Jack was, in fact, selling weed when he knew that it was, in fact, not legal. That's fine. But there's a place where personal responsibility ends and, like, a systemic issue needs to be tackled, right? Why are people getting 30 years for weed? Like, that is a real problem. That is more of a problem than an 18-year-old boy making stupid career choices, I think.
Right. Like, I do think it harms the overall message of the show to, or like the work that they did prior to kind of have this angle in that moment of like tisk tisk personal responsibility. I'm like, okay, yeah, but like what happened was so disproportionate to what the quote unquote harm that was done. It's not like he was out here. Like, if the context was different, like in the sense of like he was selling oxy to people, or he was like, if he was selling something that was like really harmful and damaging, like I recently just watched on Max the documentary American Pain, which is about, you know, the South Florida pain clinics. Like, if he had been involved in something like that, like, I could have been like, okay, yeah, personal responsibility. Yes, you harmed, you caused real harm. You were part of real harm. But no, he was just selling weed. Like, the show didn't need to be like, tisk, tisk, personal responsibility.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I feel like that little monologue kind of left a bad taste in my mouth. And the only redeeming thing about it is that it was the white male character saying this, because it would have pissed me off, like, more than just like being dumb and unnecessary. It would have really pissed me off if they made any person of color say this.
Right. And then that's like a highlight of the show. I do like Gloria is supposed to be Latina. She's like a Latin character. She,
yeah, and Rooster as well, right? Or like
he's biracial. And I do like that Gloria's pretty like unapologetic about being a con artist. Like, that's just who she is, that's what she does, and you know, she's gonna continue to do that. Like, she's gonna continue to sort of, you know, run around doing her. To whenever, you know, till whenever she stops. And so that's fun to me. I also like that that's like a function of the Rooster's mom. I think that's fun too. So I guess that's fine, but yeah, that did leave a bad taste in my mouth, because Jack is the person that the audience is supposed to identify with the most.
Right, he is our protagonist, so I don't know. He probably should not have made him say that.
Yeah.
But that being said, the fact that one of the things that the show does well, and they do a lot of things well on the show in a very comedic way, and they manage to cram a lot of good nuggets and kernels, I feel, in the 9 episodes that they have. But one of the things that the show does really well is that they make it clear that, you know, in the end, Gloria's still doing her crime because she loves it. She fucking loves it. But now she's moved on to art fraud. And Wiggles and Rooster bought a Dunkin' Donuts, which actually is a really smart investment. And Jack becomes a school teacher and he fulfills that dream, but it's under a new name. He bought himself a new identity because he couldn't shake his criminal record, right? And like, they make it very clear that these new lives, particularly for Jack and Rooster, are sponsored by crime, because it's just not realistic that, you know, a criminal or an ex-con can have a fresh start, not without a lot of financial backing or like a complete overhaul legally. Like, it's just not realistic to send people out of jail for whatever reason. They've been released, it's COVID-19, whatever, and expect them to just flourish. They have, with no money, no support, they're absolutely going to reoffend. And Jack or Glory would have probably reoffended and gotten thrown back, you know, in a very stupid manner, and gotten thrown back in jail if they weren't at Barb's.
Right. So, like, it does show, like, the necessity of, like, the true sort of like, there is no, you know, doing your time and moving on. Like, this essentially like reinforcing this idea that the system is like inherently there to like set you up. Like, it doesn't, this is the way our criminal justice system is. Like, it essentially wants you to fail. Like, there's no like going in and moving on with your life. This is something that sort of follows you forever. Like, and we should question like the moral correctness of that as a society, which is true.
Absolutely. And I love that the show doesn't demonize Jack for buying himself a new identity, because, you know, the person who's attached to that criminal record is not who he is anymore. It's not who he wants to be anymore. He doesn't want to go back to being a drug dealer, but he's never going to have a chance to live the life that he wants if he hadn't changed his identity. You know, pretty early in the season, like that first episode, when everybody who's going to be let out is let out of jail, you know, they tell him about the shelter in place order, and they're like, we don't have shelter, like, we don't have homes, we were in prison. And then
the corrections officer is like, well, that's it's a catch 22, but that's up to you to figure out. Good luck. And it's like, okay, thank you for tossing us out on our ass. And there's a real discussion to be had there about institutionalization. What happens to people when they are released from prisons or psychiatric wards, or even like people who age out of foster care, right? That's a discussion that's being had with more and more traction on social media. How can you just send somebody off of their own reconnaissance with their wits about them? Jack only had $40. He'd only earned $40 in 26 years in prison. What is he supposed to do with that?
Right. Like, and that's another thing. Imagine you work for, you're working in prison for how many years and you only earned $40? Like, that's like another real, I think, topic in question we have to ask ourselves about the moral correctness of, like, work in prison and that is essentially slavery.
Basically.
It's slavery. And, like, that's not, you know, granted, we didn't abolish it, but, like, we claimed we abolished it. So what if we just, like, you know, actually abolished it? But honestly, in this time,
it's a lot. It's no, a lot. But, like, just for our listeners, it has to be stated. I researched this briefly, you know, back in, like, 2016. But as of 2015, privatized prisons were a $2 billion a year business. They are able to turn that sort of profit by paying prisoners as little as 10 cents a day. A day. Okay? And before you tell yourself this is not your problem, understand that prisoners are being insourced to companies like Verizon, T-Mobile, AT&T, even your bank. You might not be talking with somebody in a foreign country all the time. You might be talking with a prisoner. They are making almost 100% of the equipment for the military. They make stoves. They put together refrigerators. They even farm fish on some of these prisons. And they're required by law, privatized prisons, to remain at least 90% full at all times, okay? There's a minimum. There's a minimum requirement. How do you make sure that a prison is 90% full at all times without creating new laws for people to violate in order to get them sent there?
Exactly. It's not the mark of a healthier, productive, or thriving society that if we incentivize, like, these types of things, right? However, how we do them, it's a moral failing, and we should all care because we should want everybody to. It's not as simple as, like, don't break the law, right? Because we do not live in a meritocracy or a society that is fair in any way. So we should be thinking about and challenging our leaders and challenging our politicians to make things fair, to, you know, encourage competition, true competition, what that means, if those are the values that we claim we value. And that's what's so great about art and television, because it can give us an avenue to illuminate these issues and talk about these things like we are right now.
Right.
Look at that.
But so here's my next question. I have to ask you this because my answer is yes, but I want to know what your answer is. Speaking of crime, right, as something specifically that is against the law. We're not talking about morals or ethics. We're just talking about something that is against the law. Do you feel that there is such a thing as a victimless crime?
I think that's like a hard question because it's like the philosophy and the nature of crime itself. Oh no, I don't like this. Okay. is there such a thing as a victimless crime? If it is inherently victimless, then there is no, like, crime, right? Like, so we have, like,
No, like, it's still against the law. It still violates the laws, whatever laws is on the books right now. But do you believe that something can be, you know, breaking the law that's on the books, but not hurting anyone physically or psychologically or materially?
Yeah, we have laws like that all the time. Just because something is a law doesn't mean it's necessarily just or like useful or helpful in any sort of like way that enriches us as like a community. So
hashtag slavery.
that doesn't really mean anything. I don't know. My answer is yes, I'm sure there are lots of things that are quote unquote crimes, but they are like not actually bothering anybody. I think noise ordinances are like a huge sort of example of that, right? In terms of like noise ordinance and then violating them, or like gathering places. People having street gatherings and like quote unquote, those are like become quote unquote crimes and that's, you know, connected to gentrification and wealth and all those things. Mm-hmm. In protest as well, where like when you make it a crime to like gather somewhere, like because of, you know, in order, because the idea is not really to, the idea is to stop gathering, not because like the space is unable to hold a gathering, but because like you ultimately like the interest is in protecting the private property holders. And even the idea of private property itself, and the idea is to also just penalize citizens, penalize people in the community. Mm-hmm. So, yes.
So, throughout the course of Sprung, we learn a lot about Congresswoman Paula Tackleberry, which is that, like, she is stashing her, like, she's trying to commit some sort of art fraud where she, like, replaces her real paintings with fakes in order to cash in on the insurance. She's doing a bunch of insider trading. She set up a fake scholarship in order to set her maid up to take a fraud for like money that she's like embezzling from somewhere. And she's also like set to make a huge profit off the COVID-19 vaccinations, right?
Yeah, something that's true, by the way. Something.
Yeah, a lot of people made money off of
that. Something that you can, if you want to look into that further and you listen to this podcast, Marjorie Taylor Greene, Dianne Feinstein, very famously, essentially, technically it's legal what they did, but it's also because they are congressmen and women, but it is like classic. But when you read about it, it is and you can find those reports, like I think at ProPublica and The Hill, and The Washington Post did a report about what happened. But it's technically it's legal, but like it's very like on a technicality, but also when you read about what they did, it's essentially insider trading. So I guess if you want a companion piece to Sprung, but like on a really like trippy sort of stoner level, which is appropriate considering Jack's character, I definitely like recommend I'm a Virgo, because like I'm a Virgo definitely raises all of the same questions.
I just started watching that.
It definitely raises all of the same questions and ideas with regards to business and capital and like the health of our society. And for the most part, like, I think that's why I like the show, because I like the characters. I think I'll give it like a good, my grade for the show is definitely like a good, leaning towards basic, but still like in the good category. But I definitely like it because I think it's important to continue to interrogate these ideas, important to like bring them to a public, to keep them in the public imagination so that we can sit with and contemplate and I think agitate, that's a strong word, but I'm going to use it, agitate us into trying to find a way to do better, to agree on the problems and then try to find solutions, because I don't think where we are as a world, particularly as a country, is sustainable in any sort of way.
Yeah, I agree with that. I guess my grade would also be, it would also be basic as well, but I don't mean basic like, oh, I think the show like fell off in some regard. It's basic in a way that I like. It's a basic in a way that reminds me of like the shows that I used to watch in my childhood that do interrogate certain systems, but they do it in such a comedic way that like whatever they're trying to say kind of just slips past your brain and you don't even realize that you're internalizing the message.
Yeah.
I think that comedy is a really, really great vehicle to internalize some of this. I think it's so necessary to have these conversations about things like privatized prisons, the war on drugs. You know, what is considered a crime? Does the punishment fit the crime, et cetera, et cetera? It's like you said, it's not sustainable, the current state of things.
And there you have it, folks. This is everything that we think made Sprung good, lighthearted, and funny. If you'd like to check out this series, Sprung is streaming on Freevee. If you've enjoyed this episode of The Good, The Bad, The Basic, be sure to share it with your friends. If you're a patron, be sure to check out our Sprung playlist. And if you haven't already, tune in next week, whereas we conclude this season by discussing the Netflix original, The Queen's Gambit. A period drama about a prodigious orphan who tackles opponents on the chessboard while dealing with her own substance abuse issues and childhood trauma.
The Good, the Bad, the Basic is currently streaming on all major podcast platforms, so be sure to tune into our regular weekly episodes on the go, leave us a review on your preferred platform, and share our weekly episodes on your social media. Follow us at The Good, Bad, Basic on Twitter and at Good, Bad, Basic Pod on Instagram to get in on our daily content. Also, be sure to follow our SoundCloud page, The Good, The Bad, The Basic, where all of our weekly episodes debut. If you love this sort of content and want more, become a show producer and patron over on Patreon. You can find us at patreon.com/goodbadbasic. Your support allows us to keep bringing you our regular weekly episodes as well as exclusive bonus material. Until next time, bye, everyone.
Bye, everyone.